The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
And now, The Trumpet Daily with Stephen Flurry.
Hello again, everyone, and welcome back to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. We are already here, Friday, the last broadcast of this fast-moving week, I guess all the more so because of the whirlwind of activity on Sunday and Monday with the London Pack, which we're still on a high over and still getting some really good feedback to all that happened for this area in God's work. I'll get into more emails that keep rolling in. We'll have some of that in the second segment. The follow-up Bible study, by the way, is this Sunday afternoon at 4 p.m., so all of you listeners can certainly be praying for that. There's 32, as it turns out. We've had a few added here in just the last few days. 32 non-members registered for that study, so hopefully all of them will turn out. There's one coworker coming all the way down from Newcastle upon Tyne, I believe. It's probably 3-4 hours up north. Most of the others of the 32, most of them are coming from in and around the London area. So again, we'll be praying for a good turnout and for Brad McDonald, as he'll be conducting that. That Bible study. We're working now to develop a pack for the Belfast area. That's going to be the next one sometime around the January 20th weekend. We haven't locked in dates yet, but we're aiming for the end of January for the Belfast area. Now, we've learned this week that we don't have that many Trumpet subscribers in Northern Ireland and the Republic of Ireland. That's where we were hoping to send out invitations, but only 160 total subscribers. But we do have pretty good TV coverage, at least in the northern part, Northern Ireland, and we have a few ideas here in the next few weeks to hopefully to draw more attention to the Trumpet. The next couple of Key of David programs or TV programs that we produce for the UK, we'll really be emphasizing that, and we might run an ad campaign as well. So we're looking to boost those numbers. There's certainly lots of Laodicean brethren that are scattered about in Northern Ireland and all of Ireland, for that matter, the Republic too. So we'd like to draw as much attention to that pack as we can, but it surely will be much smaller than the gathering in London, but still, hopefully one that will be effective. So something there that you can be thinking about and praying about as well. Well, speaking of that follow-up study in London, we'll reserve more of our study. We've taken a couple of segments this week to emphasize some of the points that we brought out Monday evening to really stir our co-workers and Trumpet readers to action, to move in the direction of baptism. We'll put more of that material off until Monday, which I think following that follow-up Bible study, it'll still be very timely information and good for some of you listeners. We don't we know we have quite a few listening to this program regularly who are co-workers and donors and just Trumpet readers. So we all need that stir to action as well. We'll put it off till Monday because last night we had our book club here at Edstone as we continued our study through David McCullough's biography on John Adams, and we'll take a little section from that meeting and bring it to your attention in the third segment today as we talk about just how unusual John Adams was, even compared to the other founding fathers, because of how much vision that founder had. And we'll bring in an example from Herbert W. Armstrong's life as well. There's so many, but one in particular that really did highlight just how much vision that man had early on in God's work. One other programming note to bring across right here at the start is that this weekend is daylight savings time, not for you Yankees, but for us here in the UK. We come to this 1 week earlier in the fall than the United States. So what that doesn't mean anything changes for you in the U.S., but it does change for us next week. I know we do have some listeners here and in the Netherlands that like to listen in to the live stream. And so if we move the clocks back, that would mean next week's programs will be at noon in the U.K. and 1 p.m. In Europe. Usually it's 2 p.m. in Europe and 1 p.m. here in the U.K. So an hour earlier, if you're in the U.K., Ireland, if you're in the Netherlands, if you're on the European continent and you listen to the live stream, be sure to tune in 1 hour earlier all of next week, and then the week after that, everything will revert back to what we know to be normal, at least for 49 weeks out of the year. I think it's staggered by 2 weeks in the spring and by 1 week in the fall. Well, this story, this email alert actually that came in from German Foreign Policy just an hour or so ago, a brief update on just some of the contention in Europe between Germany and Italy over Italy's national budget. This alert by GermanForeignPolicy.com says that the German establishment is increasing its demands to resolutely fight the internal enemies of the EU. This is quoting from a leading German daily, saying that the Union, these German establishment elites are saying the Union must now be vigorously defended. The Italian government coalition is not worth risking the country's fate. So the Italian government is being put into question, this alert says, because it won't submit to German austerity demands. And the article says that the EU, or rather Germany's dominance over the EU, that there's others who are protesting against this, Poland and Hungary, and even some prominent voices in France. So that's something that we'll certainly keep our eyes on. Again, Italy's national budget is bringing this to the fore, and it's happened before with Greece and others, as European member states are seeing just how dominant the influence is, the German influence is, in Brussels. And of course, when you look at the economic angle of this story, Italy's national budget, its crisis, its financial crisis, it was Herbert Armstrong who said back in the 1980s, even before that, he was saying it in the 60s and 70s, how that a banking crisis, an economic crisis in America, how that the ripple effect could trigger European nations to come together. And we know that there have to be 10 of them. There's going to be 10 kings, as Revelation 17 brings out. And the trigger will be the economic crisis in the United States. You may have seen those reports, well, we touched on it on this program a week or two ago, the ballooning deficit figure for the U.S., $779 billion just this year. And that's what prompted President Trump in one of his cabinet meetings last week to talk about an across-the-board 5% cut for all of the government departments and agencies. This is a little bit from what the president said to his cabinet last week, clip four.
I'm going to ask each of you to come back with a 5% budget cut from your various departments, whether it's a secretary, an administrator, whatever. I'm going to ask everybody to come back with a 5% cut for our next meeting. I think you'll all be able to do it.
So he's trying to rein it in, and good for him. You might remember last year when he agreed to that that bloated budget, the Schumer budget. He caught a lot of flack for that, a lot of criticism. But as he explained back then, I mean, well, I had to do it because we needed to boost military spending. Now he's trying to rein it in. This is how he retells the history from last year and the deal that he had to make, as he said last week. This is clip five.
That I made deals with the devil in order to get that done, because we had to improve our military. Our military was depleted. It was in bad shape.
And here again, he's right about that. It had been hollowed out for years, particularly the Obama years. Downsized, cutbacks in military spending, always in the Defense Department. I mean, that's just the direction that the Obama administration went in. I mean, the president, President Trump, he had some pretty harsh words for Democrats, saying that they basically hate the military. They hate security. They hate border security. He was saying that last week to his cabinet. But this is what I think really stood out. He's calling for these cutbacks. He said that he had to make a deal with the devil last year because of how much the military needed funding. And then he went on to say this about the military and about law enforcement in this same cabinet meeting, clip six.
Because now that we have our military taken care of, we have our law enforcement taken care of, we can do things that we really weren't in a position to do when I first came.
So that's what he said in the context of making these across-the-board cuts. Now that we have our military taken care of in 21 months, or whenever that last budget passed, I suppose that's probably more like 15 or 16 months ago, and everything's taken care of? Everything's taken care of for law enforcement? This is from BreakingDefense.com. It says, now we're betting there were quite a few generals who'd be willing to advise the president that the military hasn't entirely been taken care of, but the announcement is a clear signal that the budget trend is no longer upward. It's no longer going upward. Dan Gore, it says in this article, now with the Lexington Institute, starts his analysis of defense spending by saying 2019's budget is a down payment on a stronger, more ready military. In other words, there's not a lot that's happened just yet. I mean, it's not like the submarines and the battleships and the F-16s or the F-22s are already completed and they're coming down the assembly line. It's not something that happens that fast. There's no question he did boost spending significantly compared to his predecessor. But now it's being reined in, and we'll see. In other words, as BreakingDefense.com brings out, we'll see. I mean, there's been a down payment, but will there be the follow-through? It says, today's national security leadership face a dilemma not unlike that which confronted the Western allies in the 1930s. Faced with growing great power threats in both Europe and Asia, so it's giving us some helpful history reminders here, back in the 1930s, they knew, Western allies knew it was essential to build up their militaries. However, the ongoing effects of the Great Depression and bad economic policies caused them to hesitate when it came to increasing defense spending. Now, you might also add weak leadership. I mean, it wasn't just all economic factors at play, but that certainly did contribute to that weak leadership. Well, we don't have the money to spend on the military. Even as Germany was building this war machine, well, as this article brings out, for this, and we would add for other reasons, France, Britain. We weren't prepared when the war came. And the article here, Breaking Defense, says that current U.S. defense leaders are warning that the same situation could occur again. Think about the point my father makes in Great Again, how that President Trump really does do a pretty good job of identifying some of the problems. Some of the problems of the United States, some of America's problems, he can see them, he can identify them. But as he also brings out in Great Again, will this be the fix that makes America great again? Well, but for the temporary resurgence, There will be no permanent fix. We know this from Bible prophecy. The rest of this article says, the history of the Pentagon's attempts to achieve savings through internal reforms is notable for the absence of successes. In other words, when they try to fix these things, when they try to budget, when they try to make sure that the most important items on the Defense Department's list are taken care of, it just doesn't always work out that way. To date, there's no evidence that any of the projected savings from reducing overhead were actually achieved. This is going back to when then-Secretary of Defense Robert Gates announced a plan to move things around, to make cutbacks here, to make the Defense Department more efficient. They try to trim, but it usually ends, if they make trims or if they make cuts, it usually means cutting weapons, military hardware. We've had articles before at the Trumpet that have gone into some detail about how the military spends its money, where it all goes. I mean, $700 billion or thereabouts, that's a massive amount of money. But it's not all going towards submarines and fighter planes. Far from it. There's a lot of bloated bureaucracy in that department of the government, just like there is in any other department. The last bit of this piece says, flat defense budgets going forward could be the best case scenario for the military. There is the real possibility that the spending caps required by the 2011 Budget Control Act will return in 2020. You may recall that the BCA imposed some $900 billion in mandatory savings over 10 years by capping both defense and non-defense discretionary spending. It says there are good reasons to believe there will not be sufficient resources even to sustain the current military buildup. The idea that this country will pay for 74 additional Air Force squadrons, 47 more Navy ships, and some 40,000 soldiers on top of that is difficult to take as credible. So I don't know too much about this this source, BreakingDefense.com. But we certainly do know about Bible prophecy, and we know what it says in Leviticus 26 about us losing the pride in our power and our strength being spent in vain. We've certainly seen that happen over the last couple decades. All of that strength and power being spent in vain. I read to you yesterday that article about Afghanistan and the U.S. essentially looking for an easy way out. We've lost the war there, just like we did in Iraq. I mean, this keeps happening. We're turning inward, and of course, you've got to give the president some credit for at least reversing the trend or stopping the bleeding. But will it hold? Will it hold? Will there be follow-through on the down payment? We'll be following that for sure, but I think it's safe to say that the military has not yet been taken care of. Far, far from it. Victor Davis Hanson has a piece about the midterm optics, how that it's so bad for progressives. You see this caravan marching its way to the U.S. Southern border, and the president has announced that he's sending 800 troops down there, and of course the media and the left-wing progressives are up in arms. How could he do this? How could he do anything but just turn a blind eye and let them all in? That's what they want. That's what they want. It was interesting on Fox last night, this Arizona sheriff that was talking about just how that these are stories you just don't see anywhere else. And you can see why the ratings are higher at Fox. This is an angle that CNN and all the others ignore. They don't go down there. They don't go down to the border. They don't go talk to ICE and the sheriffs. They don't talk to local officials. The only time they go down there is when they hear that there's a fence or a cage of some kind. And how families, as they say, are being broken up because of all that illegal activity. But listen to what this sheriff, this Arizona sheriff, he's responsible for something like 70 miles of the border there. in the south of Arizona. And listen to what he had to say last night on Fox, clip three.
What we got going for us right now, what I think is very, very positive, is the collaborative efforts from state, local, and federal law enforcement, the executive branch, that are working so closely. It's the best it's been in my three decades when it comes to best practices on the border as we come up with community plans, federal plans that complement each other. And that's so important. What we need, we got a president that's actually out there in front saying we need to have a secure border, which I 100% agree with.
That's a sheriff who's on the front lines saying that for once, I mean, it's the best he's seen in 30 years. You have this collaborative effort. You have all of these security forces that are in agreement. The local and state officials, the federal law enforcement, the executive branch, a president who's saying we need a secure border. And like this agent says, I mean, I 100% agree with him. Why aren't there more stories like this on CNN or just in the mainstream? This is the way it would be for any nation on this earth. But as I said yesterday or the day before, I mean, the only nations that you see this pressure is applied coming from these radical progressives to open the borders, it's generally Little Judah, the Israeli state in the Middle East, and of course the United States. No other nation would tolerate a 10,000 strong mob demanding that they come into the country. I mean, these are not refugees. They're not fleeing war. They're waving their own flags. They're burning the American flag. They despise America and yet demand American handouts. And so here comes a president trying to secure the border. And as Victor Davis Hanson brings out, there's quite a few in the middle of America that agree with him. And this really is a bad look for the progressives. You can see why they're focusing in on, well, anything that they can. Now it's President Trump's inciting violence, as I covered yesterday. We'll have more on that in just a moment. But Hanson says the media are fixated on another caravan of foreign nationals flowing toward the United States from Central America. More than 5,000, mostly Honduran migrants, say they will cross through Mexico. Then they plan to crash the American border, enter the U.S. illegally, claim refugee status, and demand asylum. Once inside the U.S., the newcomers will count on a variety of ways to avoid deportation. Open borders advocates and progressives assume that if border security officials are forced to detain the intruders and separate parents who broke the law from their children, it will make President Trump and Republican candidates appear cold-hearted and callous. Well, they've had some success in making out the president and Republicans to look that way before, but as Hanson brings out, I mean, this time around, the optics of this are quite a bit different. For one, I mean, this caravan is so well organized, and so many of the marchers are men, young men. They're not families, they're not children, and they don't appear to be destitute. They don't appear like they're running from a war, a violent conflict. It's well organized by open border groups, whether from their home nation or it's sponsored by some group in America or encouraged. I mean, we don't know all the details. But there's lots of things about this that look really bad. And Hanson says most Americans realize that if an organized caravan of foreigners can simply announce in advance plans to crash into the U.S. illegally, then the concepts of a border, citizenship, sovereignty, and even a country itself no longer exist. Well, he talks about the Kavanaugh effect. And how this was another black eye for the progressive movement, and just the hysterical reaction to his confirmation. And so now the focus is on President Trump supposedly inciting violence. You can go back and listen to that program yesterday. where we talked about that at length at the start of the show. Richard Palmer posted this, he reposted this article by my father. This was an amazing read or reread. I don't know if it's still in the top slot right now at thetrumpet.com, but it was the article my father wrote right after the election in 2016. This appeared in the January 2017 Trumpet magazine. America's Coming Civil War. And he talked about how the left, the radical left, how that they were going after the president, or at that time, candidate Donald Trump, in the lead up to the presidential election, and then the reaction right after the election, and then all that's been going on since. He refers to what Barack Obama, he was out there campaigning for Hillary Clinton just a few days before the election in 2016, and this is what Barack Obama was saying about Donald Trump. Here's clip one.
This guy is temperamentally unfit to be commander-in-chief, and he is not equipped to be president.
This guy is temperamentally unfit. He's not fit. He's mentally unstable. Hillary Clinton was saying much the same. Mr. Obama went on to say in that same speech, clip two.
If you accept the support of Klan sympathizers, the Klan, and hesitate when asked about that support, then you'll tolerate that support when you're in office.
So he was a Klan sympathizer. He was going to tolerate it once he got into office. Of course, they never imagined that Donald Trump would be voted in. But then he was. And then there was the total media meltdown. There was Van Jones on CNN the next day talking about the nightmare. Tears were in his eyes. What am I going to tell my children? My children are terrified. My Muslim friends are texting me saying they're considering leaving the country. I mean, this was a disaster. This was a white lash, he said. And my father talked in that January article from last year about how that there he is with that kind of vile hatred. And CNN, as my father said, he singled out CNN for helping Van Jones to spread the hate. White lash, he said. My father wrote, where is this leading America? This is the kind of vile language we've heard over and over and over that has stirred up terrible bitterness and anger among minorities against this country. This kind of incitement is dividing the races all the more, my father said, and it's leading to race war. That's where it's leading. It's leading to another civil war. America's Coming Civil War. That was the first article in the January issue from last year. And again, this is recent history. You remember all the protests leading up to the inauguration, the protests on Inauguration Day, and then all the Antifa movements all through last year. 2017 was a violent year, the entire year, as left-wing agitators were taking to the streets, vandalizing property, starting fires, blocking traffic, smashing windows, chasing after individuals with a MAGA hat, beating up Donald Trump supporters in the lead up to the election, and after. There was one case where they dragged a man out of his car and pummeled him because he had a Donald Trump bumper sticker. I mean, this was going on for months and months and months. Widespread protests in cities like Portland, remember that? New York, Los Angeles, Chicago, Washington, D.C., Miami. And it continues. It continues. As I said yesterday, you have all kinds. In the same week that the news networks are demanding an apology from Donald Trump, an apology from the president, they're running stories about fantasies about killing the president of the United States. Listen to this montage that the guys put together earlier today. This is clip 7.
Nonviolence hasn't worked, and we are going to try to stop this.
That I thought he should have punched him in the face.
When was the last time an actor assassinated a president? It's been a while. And maybe it's time.
I have thought an awful lot about blowing up the White House.
How do you resist the temptation to run up and wring her neck?
People need to start taking to the streets.
Fight in Congress, fight in the courts, fight in the streets, fight online, fight at the ballot box.
Punch some people in the face.
You cannot be civil.
When they go low, we kick them.
You get out and you create a crowd. And you push back on them. And you tell them they're not welcome.
I want to send the military to the White House to get him.
It's an actor dressed to look just like President Donald Trump as he's assassinated on stage. Look as his character is stabbed to death.
Look as his character is stabbed to death. And then the New York Times picks up with that theme just this week. Russian assassins working together with Secret Service to assassinate President Donald Trump. And these are the same voices that are demanding, they're demanding Donald Trump give an apology because of his chants, lock her up, and things like that. I mean, that's like child's play comparatively. And I don't mean to suggest that we endorse every chant or rally or statement that the president makes. But the big picture, that's in the January 2017 trumpet. It's grounded in the prophecies of God, America's coming civil war. It goes through Amos 7. It says that God is measuring the destruction coming upon our peoples, right and left, Democrat and Republican. My father said in that article, average Americans just want everything to calm down so that they can get back to their lives and their pleasures and so forth. But the shocks for America aren't going to go away. You can see that if you're watching what is happening with open eyes. The shocks are not going away, he said last January. He said something like 20 months ago. He refers us to the chapter in Great Again, where America's race riots are leading. It's leading to this kind of measured destruction, and it's not that God wants it to come upon us. He says in Ezekiel 33:11, "I have no pleasure in the death of the wicked, but that the wicked turn." One more quote here from my father's piece. This is from January 2017. He said, many Americans are troubled by the divisions and hatreds being expressed right now, but they need to be a lot more concerned than they are. The problems are going to get worse and worse until people get the message and they learn why these disasters are happening. And then he makes this point. Donald Trump's win is a prophetic sign of impending civil war and anarchy, followed by America's worst military defeat ever. But don't blame the politicians or the race baiters or the professional rioters. This situation exists in America only because of the sins of the nation, of all Americans. We can no longer ignore what we have reaped by giving ourselves over to sin. He said, this is a reckoning. You see, we've brought it upon ourselves. We're so far removed from God, from the Bible, from even our own historical roots. This is the direction our people have chosen. Well, there's a happy ending. Thankfully, Amos 9 brings that out, the last few verses of Amos 9. And my father, he goes through those in that article from January of last year. I'd encourage you to look at that if you haven't already at the trumpet.com website today. America's coming civil war. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. If you'd like to email the program, you can send your comments to td@kpcg.fm. We'll be right back.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily. Freedom is one of the most sought-after ideals in human history. Man's search for freedom has taken him into the fiercest of protests, struggles, revolutions, civil wars, and even world wars. Today, in the midst of free societies, many continue to fight for what they perceive as ever greater freedoms. And yet, many of these same people are actively fighting against law. Few people understand that this war against law actually undermines true freedom. To learn more, request Gerald Flurry's booklet, No Freedom Without Law. In this free booklet, you will see what the Bible says about the latter-day spirit of rebellion and lawlessness that is now so common in our nations today. Also request America Under Attack. In this booklet, you will learn more about the spirit behind this attack on law. You'll see where this is leading. Both booklets are offered freely at no cost or obligation to you. Request No Freedom Without Law and America Under Attack. Email your request to td@kpcg.fm or visit thetrumpet.com. From the Philadelphia Church of God campus in Edstone, England, this is the Trumpet Daily Program with Stephen Flurry.
A few more emails of encouragement and support this past few days. It says here from the Trinidad, it's an honor to write you and tell you how much listening daily to your program encourages me to do more daily. I pray that God inspires your words to touch the minds and hearts of those who hear it every day and during any PAX, it says. Another one from Memphis. My wife and I have been praying for the weekend pack, and we're so excited to hear the update. We pray that many will heed the words that they have heard. The harvest is plenteous, but the laborers or the workers are few. It says also, the tab on the website Mr. McDonald proposed is a great idea. We are going to be making a few modifications to the website here in the next couple of weeks, so you can be looking for that. And also, as was brought out there, we'll try to draw more attention to the PACs on the website. This one from Oklahoma, the past two programs of the Trumpet Daily Radio Show have been amazing, bringing us all personally involved as a part of the two-day campaign that you just completed in London. Another one here from the UK says they're a Trumpet subscriber, but they couldn't make it down to the pack because of some health issues, but that they're hoping to see one in Manchester soon enough. This one here, it says, I'm enrolled in the HWA Bible Correspondence Course. Love the program. I always listen from Medellin, Colombia. I guess that's how you say that. Sometimes in the morning or at evening when I get back from work. I also watch The Key of David, hosted by your father, Mr. Gerald Flurry, and The Trumpet Daily. I never miss them. Thank you for helping me to open my eyes and to get to know God. This one here, coming from Australia, it says, I know you must be just about emailed out on the London pack. Well, that's not true, actually. It's been exciting hearing from you all through the week. As I said at the start of the show, I mean, we're still on a high from it. We're anxious for the follow-up Bible study on Sunday, and we'll certainly give you some more details on that come Monday morning. But it's very exciting and encouraging to hear from so many of you. Thank you so much for these emails. This listener from Australia says, I have heard all the emails as I listen to every show without fail, and I agree with them all. What an incredibly exciting time we are privileged to have been called into. And as I heard the excitement as you spoke on the PAX, my heart just swelled with love for God and the work as I see him raise another ruin. As Mr. Armstrong started the work with personal appearance campaigns, we seem to be finishing the work with that very tool. Thank you so much for including us all in these campaigns, giving us here in the field the details to pray for. Another one along those lines, coming from Kansas City. It says, I'm sure you and the crew are on a high after the London pact. We're praying. We were praying for its success, and now we, perhaps more fervently, pray for those interested, non-members, who attended this once-in-a-lifetime event. It's inspiring and humbling to think of the supreme importance and the eternal implications of these gatherings, the sifting and assessment process God is undergoing in this gunlap phase is eternity-altering, especially for those who respond and make the commitment. Wow, he writes. And then further on, he says at the end, I was so enthused and energized, in large part because of the on-site broadcast, I felt I had to reach out with the idea. He had some suggestions about how to just draw more attention to the PACs in North America, and writes here at the end, take care and thank you and the crew for your dedication. So we appreciate that encouragement. We also appreciate the suggestions, too, as we continue to work to make this program and the website and the literature and everything that the church is producing the very best that it can be. This one here comes from Texas. It says, inspiring show. When I woke up earlier this afternoon, I took some advice from a previous show and managed to get in some much-needed prayer before my graveyard shift. I made sure to fit into my prayers my great gratitude for biblical prophecy and for God's coming correction. All of this in the context of God's plan to humble us and for his kingdom to come and Christ to return quickly. Then, as I turned on the news, I saw just that with a great escalation in our nation's divisions. All of the KPCG shows are truly inspiring, but today, for me, the real kicker was something I heard toward the end of your show. You see, today I began rereading the God Family Vision booklet, and in the first few pages, your father mentions God's plan B. So toward the end of your show, when you mentioned God's plan B, that really brought me inspiration and a smile to my face. It says, congratulations on the successful pack in London, and thank you for these Trumpet Daily personal packs and for just continuing to remind us of how to be grateful and what to pray for. It says here, thank you. I'm not sure where this one comes from, but it says, thank you so much for the daily radio program that I've listened to for several years. The knowledge of truth and information is unprecedented in this world. It is my favorite part of my day to listen to the podcast. The hundreds of articles I've read on thetrumpet.com have given me incredible understanding of God, mankind, and the world. One amazing article that I read had to do with Satan owning the airwaves. Soon after, I disconnected the TV. This world is just being bombarded with filth and deception on the airwaves. But there is one that is speaking truth and knowledge worldwide, and that's the TD, the website, the Trumpet Daily, the radio shows, KPCG. I've shared this truth and knowledge everywhere I go, and with virtually everyone I meet, it's amazing how God has raised the ruins. And then one final one here. I think this, too, comes from Trinidad. I listened to your podcast and saw the pictures tweeted, and I'm so excited as I hear the feedback of the pack, especially in those who may have crossed paths with the WCG one way or another. I think I might have actually read this earlier in the week. But more suggestions following the pack, and more appreciation, too, from so many of you for what the work is currently involved in. Just as a reminder, the follow-up Bible study in London takes place Sunday afternoon at 4 p.m. 32 non-PCG members have registered for that event. So we'll let you know how that went on Monday's show. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. When we come back, we'll tidy up the program today with a few thoughts on our reading of the John Adams biography by David McCullough. We'll be right back.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily. Are we living in the last days? Some dismiss the notion as fanatical, but world leaders and news analysts are issuing warnings that are becoming more and more dire. Could Bible prophecies about the last days actually be accurate? Our brochure can help guide you through the relevant news and history and help you compare these events to what the Bible says. Are we living in the last days? This brochure is available for free right now at thetrumpet.com. From the Philadelphia Church of God campus in Edstone, England, this is the Trumpet Daily Program with Stephen Flurry.
John Adams is not directly responsible for writing the Declaration of Independence or the Constitution of the United States, but so many of the ideas and the thoughts and the expressions in there certainly did spring from his thinking and the thinking of others. He did contribute to the Constitution of Massachusetts years before the U.S. declared independence. And in that Constitution for his home state, God is referred to as the great legislator of the universe. This document says it is the right as well as the duty of all men in society, publicly at stated seasons, to worship the supreme being, the great creator and preserver of the universe. That's not only our right in this free society, it's our duty. I mean, we're not going to survive without religion and the Bible. That's the way that they thought. You think about our little booklet, Character in Crisis. All of these, this is brought out in there, all of these founders and these great biblical themes that they often repeated. America was like God's new Israel. And you see Moses and all these great seals and etchings in the Supreme Court and wherever else. Manifest destiny. It's God's will. It's God's blessing. John Adams says, it is the will of heaven that the two countries should be sundered forever. The two being the United States and Great Britain. Well, it actually was God's will that these two brothers, Ephraim and Manasseh, it was his will that they split apart, that they divorce, that Manasseh become its own great single superpower nation. And that did happen. And that's what makes those days in early July 1776 so momentous, when all 13 colonies, or 12 of the 13, I guess New York abstained, but they all came together and they said, this is God's will. McCullough says it was John Adams, more than anyone, who made it happen. He made it happen. He was the prime mover and shaker in Philadelphia. And he says further, he seems to have understood more clearly than any what a momentous day it was. He understood how momentous it was, this Declaration of Independence. He told his wife that Independence Day would be a great celebration for many generations to come. And he was right about that. It's important for us, too, to understand momentous events as they're happening. I read this email to you earlier this week. One of our trumpet readers that attended the PAC in London, who said, what a fantastic opportunity and privilege to meet one of God's top senior ministers here on earth today and to be able to attend your very first PAC. I can only hope that I wasn't the only person from the 91 non-member group that realized what a momentous occasion this is. Well, it was momentous, the signing of that document in 1776. And of course, we in God's church, we've been a part of a great many momentous events. And some of them happened early on when it was very small. It was a mustard seed beginning. Small beginnings, like it says in Zechariah 4. We don't want to despise that. We want to recognize just how momentous it really and truly is. John Adams, David McCullough says, it was John Adams above all who looked into the future and saw a new nation and a new time. Adams wrote to a friend and said, "We're in the midst of a revolution, the most complete, unexpected, and remarkable of any in the history of the world." I mean, he didn't even know that Manasseh was breaking from Ephraim. But what a remarkable time, he said to his friend. What an awesome time to be alive, to be an American. Benjamin Rush, he said about Adams that he could see the whole subject at a glance. He saw the big picture, in other words. He had the vision. I think I said last week, his great criticism of Thomas Paine's Common Sense was that it just went on about how to uproot and pull down and tear apart, but where's the planting and building that we need following the revolution? I mean, we have to build a country. We have to raise the ruins, so to speak. It's amazing when you look at individuals like this, and certainly Herbert Armstrong falls into this same category. These were towering figures of vision. They were able to see way into the future. Mr. Armstrong, when he struggled and was fighting to purchase property on which to build a campus, I mean, it all started in the smallest of ways, just with the little library building and a few acres, I forget the exact count, but a few acres surrounding it, a run-down building at that. This was back in 1946, and then 1947, early on in the plain truth. He says, "This year, Ambassador College will swing open its doors to students." I mean, we're about to swing open our doors. They just got a run-down building. That's it, in Pasadena. And he says this, Mr. Armstrong does, "Ambassador is to be a general liberal art institution, not a Bible school, minister's college, or theological seminary. It will fit students for all walks of life, offering a general and practical basic education with unusual advantages for special technical courses, as well as a thorough, sound, complete Bible course under Herbert W. Armstrong." He said, there is no other college like Ambassador. And at that point, I mean, at the time he said that, there was no Ambassador College. The doors hadn't even opened yet. And when it did, there were just 4 students. And they had to struggle just to get those 4. And yet, in his mind, in his thinking, Mr. Armstrong could already see it. No other college like Ambassador? In his mind, it was a revolutionary type, new type college. That's what he went on to say in that article. Quite a lot different from the colleges of this world today. Mr. Armstrong wrote, "The vision of this new and different college and its imperative, urgent need came like a revelation straight from God last spring. At first, the idea seemed impossible, for us almost fantastic. But the eternal our God is a miracle-working God who promises to supply every need. And literally, God has performed a miracle. When one knows the facts and circumstances, that cannot be doubted. Events have happened swiftly. Amazing developments occurred unexpectedly. The vision of Ambassador College next September is assured." It is assured. I mean, we are a part of something remarkable, something truly special and rare. That's what he was saying to his Plain Truth audience back in January of 1947, before the doors of that rundown library building, or what became the library. Back in the day, it was the entire college. Mr. Armstrong, though, he saw a new type of college, a revolutionary type of college. And he saw the the miracles that God performed to make it all come about. He went on to explain in that article why there was such a need for the college to support the work, to take the gospel message to all the world, to bring young people along so that they could then immerse themselves into the work of the church. These considerations led naturally to the policy of making Ambassador a general liberal arts institution for all young men and women, regardless of future vocation, occupation, or profession. See, he had thought it all through. This was going to happen. This was sure. What's amazing about that 1947 article is you could pull it out when the campuses, when there were three campuses and an Ambassador in Pasadena was this thriving, booming campus. And what he wrote back in 1947 would have been a perfect description of the Pasadena campus in 1982 or 1983. It all started with a great man of God who had vision. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. If you'd like to email the program, you can send any and all comments to td@kpcg.fm. Thank you for joining us today. Thank you for joining us all week long, and we'll see you on Monday.